L'cha Hashem atztaka kino yutes, osos asher hiflesa me'az v'arata, v'lonu boshes hapanim bebechina asher nitzrafnu v'osanu ti'avta. In the end of the day, we admit, we bow our head as we saw in the earlier kina, l'cha Hashem atztaka, really Hashem, your judgment is fair, your judgment is just, your judgment is right, and lonu boshes hapanim, it is us who really messed up, it's our mistake. And we go through various examples of this. For example, a few stanzas down, we talk about Lanu boshes hapanim, b'charfenu basin kumasei lanu Elohim. That's a reference to the Chet HaEgel. We describe on the few lines later, in the Koran on the bottom of page 339, L'chashem atztaka b'midbar l'chasarnu davar, Hashem took care of us in the midbar, He gave us everything. V'lonu boshes hapanim b'ni'atzut lavan, that's a reference to the chatzeros, dizahavke medubar. These are references not only to the mon, but then the rebellion of Korach, and then the sinning dizahav with gold, which is again a reference to the Egel HaZahav, etc. We go through various examples of this in the next one, Ba'achan, Me'al B'cherem, Tzelamicha, etc. And again, the theme being of accepting Hashem's judgment, of Tziduk Hadin, acknowledging our own guilt, and trying to do the hard work of accepting personal responsibility. So, in thinking about this kina, it made me ask myself, well, if the purpose of this kina is for us to say, each of us, to ourselves, and again, remembering what Rav Asher Weiss taught us an hour ago, that we look inwardly, not outwardly. So what can each of us work on? But obviously, I'm thinking now not just about me personally, but perhaps what can we as a community try to work on? Where perhaps can we look at ourselves in the mirror and say, maybe on some level, Lanu boshes hapanim. So I want to suggest the following, not as mussar, that's certainly not my place, certainly not now, but as food for thought. Last year, I think specifically on this kina, but certainly on our kina's presentation, last year we spoke about that one of the lessons of Corona was that we couldn't be over-reliant on shuls. We shouldn't outsource our Yiddishkeit and the vibrancy and vitality of our Yiddishkeit to the shul. That being robbed of the shuls forced us, we didn't want it, but we were forced to look inward and to turn our homes into mini Batei Knesset and Batei Medrash. And we shared, it was on the source sheet last year, that incredible quote from Rav Shishnal Farhirsch about how in his day already he felt that people had turned the shul into a kind of an avodah zarah, and if it would be up to him, he'd close all the shuls so that people realize that the ikar of Judaism is not what happens in the synagogue and in the shul, but what happens in your personal life or what happens in your home life. And we spoke about that being part of the musar and part of the lesson perhaps that we could take from Corona. And I think that was an appropriate lesson for last year. However, I'm afraid now, based on things that I've seen in and around my own community, in and around Israel, and certainly I've seen in a recent trip to America, and I have many friends who are Rabbanim in America, I'm afraid now we need the exact opposite message. And I think that for many of us in parts of the community, we have learned to live too well without the shuls. If you take a look at your source sheet, source number 8, very famous phrase from the Navi Yechezkel in the second pasuk. We'll get back to the first one in a little bit. But in the second pasuk, Hashem tells the Navi, and this is in Yonad Yoma, this is in anticipation of the Churban, of the Jewish people going into Golus Bavel. And Hashem tells the Navi, don't worry, Ve'yei lehem l'mikdash ma'at ba'artos asher bo'usham. Don't worry, the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed, but I will be for them a mikdash ma'at, a mini mikdash. What is a mini mikdash? So source number 9, the Gemara Megillah very famously says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Elo Batei Kenisios, Ubatei Midrashos, Shabbat Bavel. This is the idea that it's true, you won't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore, but the initial flourishing of the phenomenon of shuls, of Beis Medrashes, places to gather, to learn, and to daven, that flourished initially with Hashem's blessing during Geulas Bavel as a stand-in for the absent Beis HaMikdash. The question is, how much is this pastoral words of comfort of the Navi? And how much of this has real halachic teeth? And this is actually a very fascinating machlokas rishonim. And there's no question that there's a large group of rishonim who see this, of course the words of the Navi are true, but they see it as a true word of comfort, true words of musar, of comfort, of nechama, but not necessarily halachically that the shuls replace the Beis HaMikdash. However, there is absolutely a view in Rishonim, perhaps including the Shita of the Rambam, although we're not going to discuss the Rambam now, because Kedarko, that's a little bit more complicated than it is for other Rishonim, but probably this is the Rambam's view as well, but there's definitely a view in Rishonim that sees this Gemara as absolutely halachic, not just inspirational or agadic, but absolutely halachic, that in a not in a full way, but in a real way, in a halachic way, the shuls are endowed with the kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. So perhaps the most clear example of this in Rishonim is source number 10 from the Baal HaTosfos, the Sefer HaYireim. He wrote a book of mitzvos, and in mitzvah Tav Tes is the mitzvah of Mora Mikdash. The idea that there was a halacha, a very serious and grave halacha d'oraisa of awe, of fear, of reverence, that a person had to have if you go into the Beis HaMikdash. V'yareisa me'elokecha tziva b'hikaneis adam le'mikdash o be'beis ha'knesses o le'beis ha'medrash shi'inag behem mora v'kibud, as the Pasuk says in Parshas Bahar, es shabsosai tishmoro u'mikdashai tira'u. Tira'u, thank you. Says the Sefer Yireim, it's not only from the Beis HaMikdash, ela mimi shehizir, and it's not just if Hashem is the one who's commanding, and that's who you're supposed to be in awe and reverence of, it's not just the Beis HaMikdash, but even the Beis HaKnesses. In other words, you see clearly in the words of the Re'im, he puts in to his discussion of the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaKnesses as well. Umatsinu, we continue to go over to the back page. Umatsinu, Beis HaKnesses, u Beis HaMedrash, shenikru'u Mikdash. As we saw, it quotes the Pasuk here in Yechezkel, and quotes the Gemara in Megillah that we just saw. We see from this, he says, Lamadnu, that when we have this Pasuk that's imposing upon us a mitzvah of Mora b'mikdash, Bate Kenisios, Ubate Midrashos, Bichlal. Our local shuls, our local Bate Medrash, according to the Yireim, and again, many argue that this is the Rambam's Shita as well, they have the status of a certain Kedusha Be'oraisa. They have a status of Mikdash. Again, it's a diluted form. It's not obviously the same level as the Beis Mikdash itself. You're not Chayiv Misa for disrespecting it or something like that, the way you might be in a Beis HaMikdash. But nevertheless, halachically, our shuls have a dimension of Mikdash, to the point that to act in an irreverent way in the Mikdash. Or for example, others say, this is where the Shita of the Rambam might come in, if a person were to destroy the Beis Knesses, it may be similar to the Avera, the Titza, of destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And that might be another example of this phenomenon. Today, I don't think would be exactly the right time to go more in depth on this point, But for those who are interested, Rav Schechter has a whole essay in Eretz HaTzvi where he discusses exactly this point in Kedarko B'Kodesh with many, many nafkaminas, all based on Shurim of Rav Soloveitchik, all based on this idea that perhaps Darabonon, but perhaps much more than Darabonon, according to the Yireim, maybe according to the Rambam, the Chai Adam paskins like the Yireim. The Chai Adam brings us down the halacha, that a shul has a kedusha inherent and innately on the same level as the Beis HaMikdash, or at least on the same form as the Beis HaMikdash. So first of all, I think we need to kind of have, do a reset of our perspective on the shuls. I don't think that we are particularly, or sufficiently, I should say, sensitive to the kedusha of the shul. And the reality is that even though it was necessary, and thankfully we were able to do so, but the neighborhood minyanim on the street don't have that kedusha. The neighborhood minyanim in someone's house don't have that kedusha. That's a kedusha that is adheres to a shul, a dedicated building, or a beis medrash, a dedicated building to Torah and to tefillah. So number one is we have to appreciate the kedusha in a real halachic sense, not just an agadic or a musar or rhetorical flourish, but in the real halachic sense, the kedusha of a beis hamikdash that is, we're missing, yes, but Hashem gave us a form of a replacement, and to be willfully and so commonly not taking advantage of that when we can is something I think that we all need to think about. But I want to go forward, just go back to the first source again from the Navi again, just for a brief moment, because something struck me this year in a way, you know, which is the beauty of Torah. You know, depending on what's on your mind, same sources which you've seen 100 times can strike you a different way, and that is that this pasuk, the one that's quoted in the Gemara, when you have context, and this is always true, context always helps, right? But two psukim earlier is when the people and the Navi are crying out to Hashem about how bad the situation is. Again, this is a Tisha B'Av pasuk in a sense, right? He's talking about the Churban, and you see right in the beginning of source 8, the Ezak Kol Gadol V'Omar, Hey Hashem Elokim, right? We're crying out to Hashem, what do you intend, Hashem? Kila Ata Osa Sheris Yisrael? Are you going to have a complete destruction of the Jewish people? You know, again, at the moment of the Churban, they didn't know that they would, you know, live a prosperous life in Bavel and flourish and, you know, write the Talmud Bavli. You know, we know this retrospectively. In the moment, they were terrified. They were, you know, for all they knew, you know, Hashem was going to pick up the Beis HaMikdash and plop it back down on their head and kill them and destroy them. They were terrified. And the answer of Eilem Mikdash Ma'at is a response to that. So I think it's not just a halachic response, although it may be, clearly, but I think what the Navi is teaching us, and we can really appreciate this year more than we ever have, if we allow ourselves to, is that just like what the Navi is being told, that the Batei Knesios and Batei Midrashos of Bavel will be a comfort, right? If you read these psukim, if you put your Tanakh hat on, these are psukim of comfort. I mean, the first part is of great tension and anxiety, but the answer is one of comfort. Hashem is being menachem us. Don't worry, you'll have shuls. And I think, given all that we've been through over the last year, if we allow ourselves to, our shuls can serve the same purpose now as well. They can also serve as a form of comfort for us and our communities. And I know that this is complicated, and I know that this may be sensitive in many communities, including my own, where again, I think people are watching this right now, many of the people in the shul itself and others in their homes. And I know that many people are still conflicted about going to shuls, and in many situations, no two situations are the same, and in many cases, it's difficult. You know, for some people, the rules of their local shul are too strict. They make me wear a mask. And I don't need to tell you, 99% of people, psychologically, are done with masks. And in case you're wondering, that is not just for people who wear yarmulkes and have beards. I've seen many, many such people without in the malls not wearing masks either. And I'm not criticizing. I can relate to the frustration, trust me. So certain people don't want to go to shul because they make me wear a mask. Again, I don't even make this as a criticism. Someone who usually comes with me every year to Tisha B'Av here with us from our neighborhood said, I don't want to have to wear a mask, so therefore I'm going to stay home and watch. There's certain people I recognize from every year I don't see this year. At least one of them, I know that's the reason. He was honest with me about it. I understand. I do. I really do understand. But for other people, it's the opposite. They don't want to go into the shul because the shul is not strict enough. For the people who aren't strict. I'm not judging. I'm doing my best. I tell my balabatim they shouldn't judge each other. I try to tell myself not to judge. It's really, really trying. It's really complicated. And it's really hard. Some people are too lenient. Some people are too strict. People are nervous. I get it. I really do. And the bottom line is, if a person really has reasons to have a health concern because of their age or their, I get it. Even if everyone's wearing a mask, maybe the best thing for a person right now is not to be in a shul and in a confined environment. I get it. Every case has to be understood on its own. And I'm really, really trying, and I hope I'm succeeding, not to be critical or judging anyone. I'm just raising the point because I think for understandable reasons, we have lost some of the sensitivity and perhaps some of the appreciation that we used to have over the last year. I'm asking everybody here, everyone who's watching and who will watch, just think about it. Think about what you're missing when you don't come to shul. And I mean, even if you have a minyan somewhere else. In my case, we have people who are davening outside the shul, but on the street, so they can hear. Okay, there's a tremendous amount of that, but it's not in the shul. And you're missing something. Now, maybe it's the right decision. Maybe it is the right decision for certain people. It's certainly possible. But think about it and ask yourself. And even if things are a little bit more difficult than you would like in either direction, but is it really worth giving up what a shul is? And if the answer is yes, and you've done an honest cheshbon nefesh, so you certainly don't have to answer to me. I'm a nobody. I respect that. But at least go through the thought process, go through the cheshbon nefesh. Am I missing shul? Am I going enough? Can I go? Try it. And if you can't go, then figure out other ways to connect to the shul, to your rav. But don't forget the shuls. If last year's avoda was to realize that there is a vibrancy of Yiddishkeit that doesn't require the community, unfortunately, as so often is the case, I think the pendulum has swung too hard and too fast in the other direction. And we have to try to get it back into a healthy medium. Hopefully, the pandemic and the virus will cooperate. But the point is, even a little while ago, when there were no issues in Israel, and even in large parts of America, where corona, for all intents and purposes, is not worried about anymore, not everyone's back in shul. Hamev and Yavin, everyone knows what I'm referring to. And each of us are least responsible for ourselves, if not more. And just ask ourselves, are we doing enough? And if the answer is yes, that's great. And if we could do more, and if we could be more connected to shuls now, so perhaps today is a day to think about it, and maybe even to make a Kabbalah to do even just a little bit more in connecting us to our shuls.